When I was a kid, there were a lot of songs about wishing on stars and dreaming whatever dreams and how you could pretty much have whatever you wanted, if only you wished it.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference.
Even then, I thought there was something crazy about it. But like a lot of kids, I took these silky promises for my own test drive. And I didn't just wish on stars. I put in some hard work. To make my dream of becoming Superman come true, I did a lot of very fast running. I'd lift heavy rocks and try to bend bars. I'd triangle my arms through the air and jump off little hills.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's Superman!
Or you could look down on the ground at a kid with triangle arms, hopping around in his backyard and struggling with an unbendable metal bar. Of course, at some point, you realize this formula of wishing and dreaming doesn't quite culminate. Strangely, for me, these songs eventually created a completely opposite sense. Wishing was wishful thinking. Dreaming was entirely separate from anything you could get or be in reality. But this is a very American idea, that dreams aren't just dreams. It's deep in our culture, and it gets reflected all the time. When I saw Field of Dreams, I went with it.
I have just created something totally illogical.
If you build it, he will come.
In the movies, I can suspend my disbelief. But outside of that, I knew.
If you build it, they won't come.
The world, of course, has a way of turning such judgments upside down, as I recently discovered on a trip to Essex, Vermont, to the home of Pat and Beth O'Connor. They have a small white house on 11 acres. There's a heart-shaped pond on the side lawn and apple trees shadowing the rock walls. Unlike their farming neighbors, the O'Connors have a parking lot, and it's not unlikely for 1,000 cars to come rumbling down the little dirt road. Because for the last decade, the O'Connors have held regular fundraising wiffle ball tournaments that play out on a pair of miniature replicas of two Major League Baseball parks, Little Fenway and Little Wrigley. Pat O'Connor remembers the first time he shared this dream with a friend.
Little Fenway was drawn on a napkin the first time with Bill Livingstone and over coffee, and Bill thought it was a great idea. And that was part of, I think, in the back of my mind, why I wanted to run it by Bill first, is because I thought that he was probably the closest guy I knew to not telling me this thing is ridiculous.
Like an exchequer of dreams with a rubber stamp, if you scribble it on a napkin, Bill Livingstone will approve. After the napkin meeting, Pat O'Connor, a hardware analyst at IBM in Burlington, went to his computer.
Basically, he sent an email out to a bunch of his friends and said, I'm going to build a field. Who wants to come and help? And we, about 30 guys showed up one day, and we started putting the Green Monster together and putting a post in the ground. And
that's Larry Riegert. He's been umpiring games at Little Fenway for the last decade.
My understanding was just going to be, for friends and family. The first event he had was a friends and family event. It was a 4th of July party. After 9/11, they had a small event here that raised some money for the Red Cross for some Little League team. And then he got the inspiration to look for a bigger charity that he can do something for every year. And he chose the Travis Roy Foundation after reading Travis Roy's 11-second book. So
the initial idea, as Larry Riegert says, was to just build an outrageously spectacular wiffle ball park. What Little Fenway became, almost immediately, wasn't a part of the original notion. The tragedy of September 11th transformed a slightly crazy backyard project into a hugely successful fundraising endeavor. In 10 years, Little Fenway has raised over $1.2 million for charities like the Travis Roy Foundation. The exactingness of the details and the lengths that Pat O'Connor went to for purposes of accuracy takes a small bit of your breath away.
I remember talking to a groundskeeper at Fenway Park and saying, would you mind filling up this vial with dirt from third base? And the look in his eye was, who is this clown? but he did it for me. And then I went and got some from the track too. And I brought those vials of dirt back to Vermont, and then I went and started visiting various quarries to find out what that dirt was and how I could actually get the same granularity of dirt and the same color that was at Fenway, and I was able to match it up pretty good.
When good dreams find good expression, it all suddenly seems so obvious. But it's difficult to imagine being on the other side of that napkin. So where did this vision, and the tenacity to see it through, come from? Even Pat's wife, Beth, isn't exactly sure.
Small-scale Fenway Park was pretty much the first time I heard about it. I was like, yeah, right. I couldn't envision it. And then next thing you know, he's got a guy over here with a, you know, with a bulldozer, and they're flattening the earth. And I knew he was a little eccentric when I married him. I mean, I knew certain things. I just didn't know the extent of it. But
you know. Do you yet know?
Nah, that's the scary part.
It's still broadening.
That's the scary part. We never know.
Pat traces the roots of this big project that's come to involve his entire community to a trip he took with his brothers in 1993.
We mapped it out. We drove in a Ford Aerostar, went 9,000 miles, and we saw every team. But when we went on that trip, I realized that, you know, going into a ballpark was something special, number one, but going into Fenway Park was even, you know, the best. And yeah, I think because of that, I said, well, if I was ever going to do something in my backyard, it would be something related to Fenway Park. And I guess that's what kind of led me to say, wouldn't it be nice to have a miniature Fenway Park?
I don't know about you, but I think I could spend my entire life touring beautiful baseball parks in a Ford Aerostar and never, ever, ever once think about building a miniature park. But that gets to the essence of dreams. Like fingerprints or shadows or faces. We all have them. No two are exactly alike.
A lot of it is you kind of plant these seeds and they grow. You know, people take care of a lot of the hard work. It's like contagious. It brings out the best in people in terms of their generosity and their feeling of, by giving something like their time and energy and resources and money, and to see the folks that are benefiting from it is what life's all about.
Back in high school, I used to sometimes see one of the janitors hanging out in the auditorium. He'd lean his broom into the soft curtains and curl the dust sheet off the piano, and he'd just stand there and play. Not well, and not any real song, just a few notes. At the same time, I had a friend on the track team, and one day I found him out in his father's shop. He'd been going out there making sculptures out of wood, using drills and jigsaws and sanders, and he was embarrassed when I found him. He didn't want me, he didn't want anyone, to know about this. But I always wondered what happened to the piano-playing janitor, to my wood-sculpting runner friend. Someday you might find yourself scribbling something ridiculous on a napkin, or your fingers might keep finding pianos, or you may, unaccountably, keep going out to your father's woodshop. If you're lucky, you'll see that you are, for some strange reason, a little bit in love with something unexpected, something that's not what a janitor is, not what a runner does, not what a hardware analyst at IBM is or should be doing. And if you can see it, like Pat O'Connor did, you can then bring it into the world, and the world will take it where it wants. And you'll follow after it with a shovel or a lawnmower, whatever you need to keep it alive. Maybe you won't change the world or make your fortune, but if you build it, well, at least you'll have it, and maybe they will come. Maybe your dream is like that.
Building Little Fenway was the journey, and it's not really just completing the project. It's the process of actually building it that's been the most enjoyable to me, and that's why I say it's never done, because I don't want the story to end.